Today is October 27, 2006. The following is an oral interview in history taken by Michelle Gerber of Richland, Washington. It is an interview of Dale Geer, a longtime worker at the Hanford nuclear site in Richland, Washington. So you got hired by Rockwell in very late 1978, is that right?
No, it was January 31st, 1979.
Okay, because I'm seeing here pre-employment physical in December of 78, but that's okay. It all meshes.
Right.
And you came here with a good attitude about Rockwell because they've been responsive in hiring you, is that right?
Right.
And then maybe you can start out by telling me, you know, where you first worked as a Rockwell employee.
Okay, I was hired on by Bernie Saresig.
Know Bernie. Yeah.
He was radiation monitoring manager, if I recall, mm-hmm. at B plant, and I hired on at WESA. And I was actually given the choice of being HPT. Or an operator, and I knew nothing about either one at the time, so I chose operator, and I've been an operator the whole time out of Hanford.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you officially an NCO?
NCO, yeah.
Okay. And at WESF, they were separating parts of the tank waste out to get...
Cesium and strontium. We would go ahead and bring in runs and boil them off and use the tilt pour method to... go ahead and fill, I believe it was 7 capsules at a run, then we go ahead and test them that everything came out right, weld them up, put them in an outer capsule and weld that up, scan them, decon them, and then store them in the cool cells. Yeah.
Now, did you actually do the welding, or what part of the operation did you actually do?
I did every part because I was new. I was trying to learn everything that I could. I volunteered for manipulator changes just for the experience. several different things just for the experience and try to get the tribal knowledge built up as fast as I could.
Were you at WESA how long?
I think it was 2 weeks short of 2 years.
Okay, about 2 years.
Yeah.
And during that time, how do you feel the conduct of operations was? How do you feel the safety aspects of the job were conducted?
I felt it was professionally done, mm-hmm. but then you also had your safety professionals that were hired to do their job, and so... going by that, you put your trust that they would make the right decision, and then also that you would train to the level of safety that you need to keep yourself out of trouble.
So was there worker involvement? Did you sit down as you were going to plan a job, or did the safety professionals plan it and then simply tell you what you were going to do?
Pretty much we would plan the job, and I worked with experienced workers that I knew would keep me safe and not likely to get in any kind of trouble.
How much of this work were you doing in PPE?
Well, if we get into a manipulator change, obviously the whole room would be put on whites and masks then. And so we had our manipulator changes. If we'd be doing any kind of cell process work, you could do that in street clothes, although I was more blue coveralls. In other words, it was a clean environment. And if we'd go on backside of the process cells, then that would also be a contamination area,
right.
Potential. And so we would wear our whites there, although we wouldn't have to wear a mask back there.
Do you feel the training was adequate or was not adequate at that job?
At the time, I thought it was adequate. But over the last 3.5 years, I'm seeing that it was not.
I see. In what way? What did they not do?
I have absolutely no training for being a lead handler, although I've been a lead handler the whole time out there for 27 years.
What in this job in particular, Wessa, where was the lead? I mean, where was the lead component?
The lead was always in the counterweights of the manipulators, and it was raw lead. I believe it's still raw lead, but they might have it coated now. But when you were changing the manipulators, you'd have to get up on the ladders, and you would actually be rubbing against that.
So the I know the manipulator changeouts were very high, you know, really high radiation work, because you've got the parts that have contacted the material exposed,
right,
and coming back out and being bagged out, and then a new part being fitted in. At that point, so you felt okay for those couple of years. You felt like there was a good spirit of camaraderie, and you felt safe and things like that.
Yeah.
And then that mission was ending just about 81, 82, was it not? They were finishing.
We were close to the mode where we were starting to ship capsules out to different places around the country,
right,
and around the world as well,
right,
for irradiation of medical supplies mainly, I believe. Also, possibility, I think it was irradiating some food as well.
And is that why you left, Wessa, or what?
No.
What prompted that?
I left strictly because I had never worked a steady shift before, and this was rotating shift against the body clock.
Oh.
And my body could not figure out when to be awake, asleep, or what.
Understand.
And the only reason I left it, I loved the process. I did very well at it. My boss liked the work that I did. My boss's name was Bob Higbee at the time, H-I-G-B-E-E. And he's dead. He died a few years ago at a young age.
So that upset. Now, why did they have to go on this rotation schedule? I mean, how did you have any input? Did you get a chance to say, I'd like this changed, or was it just, it's this
No,
way?
It was by seniority and training.
Mm-hmm.
So we ran XYZ, or a few of the ones that have been there longest liked ABCD shift.
So you, as the junior person, were not,
right.
Yeah, I understand. Right. My son
took what was dished out.
My son's in that position right now in his job in Seattle. Often has to work 12-hour nights, and it's, you know, suffers. He suffers a little bit of depression and, you know, things because his body is just, I don't know, it just wasn't meant to work that way.
You can record this. By the way, anything that I tell you today, I'm perfectly willing to back up with documentation.
Okay.
To the very best that I can.
Yeah. That's great to know. This is a long time ago, but that's great to know. Now, I see on the notes here, it says in 1979 to 81, cleanup of a broken transfer line with burnout doses. Could you talk about that?
Yes, that was the hot pipe trench job, they called it, at B plant, adjacent to Wessa. And what happened there was they had an overhead crane that had stacked cover blocks off the process trench in the B plant canyon, and what they did was something unusual. They had normally stacked them too high, and in this case the crane operator stacked the cover blocks three high, and then another crane operator, I'm not sure how long afterwards, I think it was a few days, actually grabbed the second set of cover blocks, not knowing that there was that third one stacked on top, and they tried resealing the hot pipe trench with that second layer of cover blocks. Meanwhile, when they pulled it out, the top layer slid down and squashed and ruptured several pipes that was in the transfer process.
So you were part of a team that was called in to fix those pipes?
Yeah. Emergency cleanup stuff. Our PPE was 3 sets of white coveralls. The first 2 sets we would automatically throw away because of contamination concerns. And, of course, that was, we were jockeying burnout doses of 300 mR per week. And we did that for quite a while. I forget the length of time that it took to get the whole thing fixed, but I was involved with several entries to that. And of course, the whole area was highly contaminated as well as high radiation.
Now, you know, in terms of when you would go in, tell me about a typical shift. I mean, would you dress up and go in and stay in for how long?
You'd stay in pretty much for the whole shift. No, I'm wrong on that. I'm thinking, trying to recall. I would say probably a little closer and more accurate would be 3 or 4 hours at a time.
Okay, and were you wearing, were you on mask? I mean, I'm assuming you were.
Right.
Yes, okay.
On mask, but apparently we found out that it was not the right filters for the mask.
And can you explain that a little more? What type of mask and what type of canister, if you can remember?
I think I remember P100 cartridges rather than any kind of chemical protective cartridge.
I see. And so was Bernie Sarasek still the radiation manager there?
He was, but I had really no direct dealings with him other than him originally hiring me.
What were the HPT's instructions, do you know, on how to monitor this job, how to time people, how to test people?
I know that they set up integrators so that you could monitor exposures on a lot of people without actually being in the middle of the exposure. It was radioed back and forth to people. And people got a number assigned to them, which was usually marked on their back or maybe their front. Put number 1 on 250 dose or something like that, and then you would set it with the integrator, and that way you could monitor how close people were to burnout without actually burning yourself out.
Did that system work, or was that system fairly close?
It worked quite well.
Really?
Yes.
So you, the doses you were getting there, were they within the limits of the day? Were they considered acceptable at the time?
I don't know the paperwork shuffle on it, but I would imagine there would have been some people probably get more exposure than they wanted them to because it was an emergency type situation.
Was that part of the things that you were told, you know, this, if we don't clean this up, we could, you know, have a lot of property damage, or we could lose the canyon in terms of no more entries? What were you told about that job?
My recollections are vague, other than we had utmost in mind to stabilize and fix the situation.
Right.
Even though it would be long term.
Right. Did you ever feel ill at the time? Did you feel, when you got home, did you have any symptoms of not feeling well?
Not that I recall.
And how long did this go on? Several weeks?
No, I'm trying to remember the time length, but I know it was at least for many months. But I really can't recollect without asking some people, and I can ask people that would remember that.
Well, unless there's anything more to say about that job, and you tell me if there is, I'd like to get into the tank farm period.
Yeah, it was from that job in Wesseth that I went directly over to West Tank Farms, which was at 224U building, which was the uranium oxide process building.
Why did you report to work there? Was that the headquarters office for West Tank Farms?
It was actually the West Tank Farms.
Okay.
We shared that building with the UO3 people.
Okay, so you didn't necessarily work the UO3 process?
Not at all.
Okay.
In fact, none of us really knew anything about it that I know of.
Okay, so you're just there.
They were processing and they were separate from us. All we were doing was using the change and shower and lunchroom facilities as well as what offices we needed.
I see. Okay. I'm going to just write that down because, forgive me for a minute while I write, because I read that and I thought, well, would you work in UO3 processes? But no. What were you assigned to, you know, when you first went to Tank Farms? Just tell me about what that was like and what they told you you would be doing and what some of your first jobs were.
I can't recall any specifics other than knowing that we were going to set up transfers and install pumps, and after a few months we started working on the salt well projects.
Mm-hmm.
I was in on the first salt well installations, and the salt well jet pumps did not work very well, so we were jockeying 300 MR exposure for week after week for about a year and three quarters.
Now, jockeying, does that mean that these were so-called allowable doses, and as long as they were managed within some extended time frame, is that how they did it?
Right, our weekly dose of 300 MR. And they'd like to save some back in case there was an overtime that came up. Or a little later on, I was also involved with outages up at 100 N. And so we did near burnout exposure up there as well, but we held some back as well for overtime at Tank Farms if jobs would come up.
Now, I'm just going to throw something out. This was about 1982, is that right, that you went over there? It looks like to me. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Or 81?
81 is when I transferred to Tank Farms.
Okay.
But, also obviously 82 and from then on.
Now, in 1982, President Reagan announced the so-called Star Wars program, which meant for Hanford that we were going to reactivate a lot of old plants.
Right.
And it seemed like that was a time where things got extra busy. I know Purex, PFP, were all gearing up, retrofitting, getting ready for President Reagan's push on defense material. Did that affect, you know, was that something that affected the workers? Were they aware? Were they talking about it? Were they seeing more activity? Or were they just sort of business as usual?
No, absolutely. Things were at a much more accelerated pace. Anybody that was around during that time, I could give you some names and phone numbers on all this. We questioned constantly any time we'd go over around the Purex stack or the UO3 stack, as skinny as that was. What is that brown crud coming out of there, and is it going to affect us? Well, we didn't find out then, other than you could smell ammonia either coming from Purex or from AW Farm clear past a Y Farm trailer. Well, and the smell with the ammonia being most prevalent was overwhelming. And I haven't found out until just even last week that the action level, which I had thought was 25 parts per million on ammonia, is now down to 12 parts per million. Mm-hmm. Now, the ammonia smell, to be that strong, whether it be out of AW or Purex, would have been up in the thousands of parts per million.
Is that, do you think or do you know if the ammonia smell was coming from the stack or from tank farms venting of some kind?
It was coming from both, because you could see the brown plume coming out of Purex. And AW Farm was where it accepted a lot of the transfers from Purex.
Now, Purex in 1982 and 81 was getting ready to restart, and actually did restart in November of 83. So inside, they were doing pre-start testing, is that right? Probably during that time. And struggling, as I understand it, struggling very hard to get ready to open.
Right, and of course, they're verifying tank space so that we can handle the waste. And I'm not sure, we never found out the exact types of waste. That there was no emphasis to find out on our part. And didn't find out till later that, well, aside from questioning, what's all these smells, that it never went beyond that. It never went beyond.
But the workers were well aware and discussed these smells. I mean, they were strong enough that you talked about them frequently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anybody?
And there was fallout on the cars parked upwind of the stack of Purex. There was fallout that on at least one occasion that I know about, that it was contamination, radiation contamination.
Was it particulate? Was it flaky?
Yeah. And there was many other times to where the cars would be coated with a dust or with flakes that were parked. And I had heard that there was at least two times to where they had to detail several of the cars that were parked upwind. That would be downwind of the stack. They actually had to pay for getting the cars detailed.
Did you have weekly or daily safety meetings with your work group and your supervisor during those years?
We had the regularly scheduled meetings. That would be weekly.
Did you ever bring this up? Did anybody bring this up about, you know, what about these smells? What about the things we're seeing with our own senses?
I can't recall, but it would have had to have been brought up during that time, because it lasted for a long time. It wasn't just for a few months, it was for a few years.
And the supervisors are going to work there also.
Right.
Were they, you know, did they ever give feedback on, you know, they felt, or, you know, did they acknowledge that it was there and that they smelled it too?
With the security mode that was prevalent at that time, you don't ask. You don't go talking about too much, because they might put you under administrative review, and that was direct job intimidation, if nothing else.
This would be a good time for me to ask about Rockwell management policies in general, or attitudes. You know, at the time you'd never worked for any different contractor, but now you see others as they operate. How would you characterize Rockwell in terms of, I don't know, openness, responsiveness? You know, was it a good company to work for in that sense?
I liked a lot of what Rockwell did more than any company since. And Westinghouse was by far the worst for trying to intimidate the workers. They flat tried to. Westinghouse brought in some officers and gentlemen, and I do that in quotes because that's the last thing they were, most of them. And because of the identified problems that have been documented over the years by operations personnel at the field level, at the grunt level, DOE had two choices: either fix them or purge tank farms of all the field level knowledgeable people that they possibly could, and they chose the wrong one, because we're still trying to recover from that even now. And you're talking 15 years or so that we've been trying to recover. They actually brought the Westinghouse officers in there, the field level people, operators mainly, but also to a degree HPTs and electricians or fitters or whatever, actually trained these people. But then these people turned right around after they felt that they were trained, and they tried to do everything they could to stop us from bringing up safety stuff.
Mm. Now, in those years, you said you were assigned to West Tank Farms, and Purex is an east area. How often did you go back and forth?
It could happen any day. Plus, after I was on days getting my training, after a period of time, I think it was about 2 years, I actually went on shift and spent my time in the east area on back shift.
Now, what did you do most of the time? I know there was a lot of single shell pumping at the time. They called it stabilization, trying to get the liquids out. And yet there was also trying to upgrade the double shells to handle Purex's imminent restart. What did you work on mostly?
Transfers. I also, for a period of time, ran a crew, even though I was never upgraded to a boss. I actually ran a crew of, I believe it was 9 people, to where we were pumping out catch tanks in East Area, and they would be pumped into a portable tanker truck, and all of the quote rainwater, and it wasn't all rainwater, because one of the tankers ended up getting a reading of 5R at the tail because it sucked in something other than rain. All of this got dumped into C-106, our self-boiling tank. Now myself, now I would highly question that self-boiling tank, because it's been identified as having mercury, and mercury at 77 degrees starts going to vapor.
So I C-106 has a real interesting history, and it surprises me when you say they would add to it, because I know that it was a single shell self-boiler that they wanted to empty, but they had to keep adding water until they could empty it. So you're saying that the catch water and the rainwater went into C-106 as part of the water additions?
Yes, and if they didn't have enough from the catch tanks, then they would actually bring a load of water down there to keep it from getting too hot.
And tell me about the actual physical, how this worked. I mean, you obviously opened the riser to get this in. I mean, how did the tanks contact you or the environment during this time?
Okay, either pumping out the catch tank or dumping it into C-106, either way you would have to go ahead and hook up a pump hose or a discharge hose.
Exactly.
Depending on what you're doing. And my recollection was it was a 4-inch riser that we had on both ends that we'd have to hook the flange up to and bolt it down. So we had our pipe fitters, we had our HPTs. We obviously didn't have anything for industrial hygiene snippers. And so we wore a P100 cartridge on an MSA mask, or I'm not sure if they had Scott's then or not. I believe they might have. But regardless, it was a P100 cartridge instead of any chemical cartridge. And so we'd go ahead and sleeve our hosing and practice our radcon. And we didn't have any trouble at all. And then once we'd pump out a load from the catch tank, then we'd have to get the Teamster to go ahead and drive the truck down to C-106 and position it. We'd get that hooked up, Once again, with Radcon control and the pipe fitters and all of us doing the job that we were trained to do, and we would actually open up the valve and let it self-drain overnight. And then we'd come back the next day and button it up and move on to the next catch tank if that's what was scheduled.
And you did, that was quite a bit of what you did during those times. That was
many times, yeah. It wasn't every day, and it I would say probably at least a half dozen catch tanks.
Did you ever smell anything during that time, or can't you smell when you've got a mask on?
You'd smell it even though you had a mask.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did it smell like? Did it smell like ammonia? Did it smell like the same smells from the other place?
There was a variety of smells, and of course I said it long before I ever had it verified by health and safety that, hey, I've got a certain amount of sinus problem because of the dust and the other stuff around the workplace that is considered normal, and the allergens in the air, and so that your nose is a poor indicator of a hazard that you're being exposed to.
Did you ever feel, when you finish those jobs and go home at night, did you ever feel kind of queasy or have any symptoms at all?
No.
No.
Not till later.
Yeah. I'm going to, just for a second, I'd like to jump ahead. In 1993, they finished what they called a surface cleanup project in the tank farms, which was to essentially put in a lot of fresh gravel and cover up any surface contamination, so-called, to make the tank farms easier to walk in and out of, so that not in every case would you have to dress out. So previous to that surface cleanup, what was the condition? When you walk in a tank farm, were most of the surfaces contaminated? Was there any effort made to tamp down dust or to fix contamination on any of the piping or anything like that?
Not unless it was higher readings, mm-hmm. and it might have been in an affected work area. No, it was normal to run across contaminated joints to the piping, this type of deal. And right around that time also, there was one thing that I ended up identifying. I got tired of looking at it, and so I did something about it. We are required to practice contamination control as part of our job.
Yeah.
And I even forgot about bringing this one up to Sherry, I believe, in the council. Okay. This particular deal had to do with S-Farm and all the fiberglass duct work that they had. There was at least 24 areas that I recall to where the fiberglass duct work was coming apart and dripping direct tank waste onto the ground, condensed out from coming out of the tank riser and laying on these flat parts where they had a cement support for this piping, but they also had a U-bolt running across the top of the piping and hooking into the cement support.
Right.
Well, what they did not do with the cement support was tamp the ground when they put it in. So therefore, instead of it being a support, it became an anchor.
Sure.
And
it would subside.
Pulled it apart like this. Like a slightly modified V is what I'm trying to describe for the tape here.
You're showing a V with your hands. Yes.
Yeah. And so all these tanks were open to atmosphere, and they had their filters and stuff like this. But where the piping was located that was dripping, there were no filters. It was direct out of the tank and a few feet on down the line where it was laying flat, and it would cool off and condense and drip.
Well, S-Farm was built in 1950. Do you believe that was the original equipment that had never been fixed in by that time, 30 years?
No, I recall J.A. Jones or Kaiser, I forget, it was during that time frame, actually putting that equipment in. And what I did was practice contamination control because I got tired of reporting it or looking at it. So I put a bag over each and every one of those risers with rags inside of it to absorb. I put in a 5-gallon can, partially filled with kitty litter, underneath that to go ahead and be a backup to catch any drips. I also put rad flags there, and I put rad labels there. And there was another couple people that helped me out on that job. I can recall one of them. If we want a name on that, I can give that.
You know what? I'm kind of, I'm feeling a amazement in one sense, because, you know, when you do a job like that, you've got to have a work order. You've got to procure the equipment. Did you just do this ad hoc without?
I did it because we are required to practice contamination control, and I did it.
So you just sort of did it, I'll say, off the books, not with a formal work order and the company procuring the material.
Exactly. And they raised holy hell when I did it.
Tell me about that.
I don't know who, but it definitely got some attention.
So,
big
so that
time.
It just one day somebody noticed that you had done this.
Yeah.
And you had already done it.
I'd done it. It needed to be done on at least 24 different places that I recall.
And did so? Tell me about the fuss. Who did what? Who said what?
Well,
I mean, what did they do about it?
That was during the time frame they were spending so much money and attention on SY Farm.
Yes.
And I can't recall the Admiral's, Watkins. Admiral Watkins was coming for a visit. And they wanted to impress him with how good SY Farm was because SY was in the news. And my thing was that you have upwind of SY, you have S Farm.
Yes.
And if they're going to pay that much attention and money to SY just to gloss it over and make it look pretty, then maybe they should be practicing contamination control on something that definitely needs it.
When I hear Admiral Watkins, I think of jumping ahead a few years to at least about 1990. Is that right?
Probably pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you did this, and did a supervisor talk to you about the fact that you had done it? Did anyone say anything?
I don't think anybody talked to me direct on it.
Did they ever?
They had to have meetings on it, I know, because there was definitely some action stirring, okay? But it still took a long time for them to go ahead and get the funding to replace that stuff.
So,
but it's all gone now. It's all gone.
Of course. Did they ever, you know, I recall in the news back then, not this particular incident, but similar incidents where people changed radiation postings when the Admiral was coming and got reprimanded and got into the news. And they said that the news article said Hanford was, you know, glossing over problems simply because there was a visitor. Do you feel that did you ever hear that, or is that why they got upset that you had done this?
They got upset because they knew they should have fixed this a long time before. And basically they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar after being asked and told many times by many people that there was problems out there. It wasn't just me by any means. I was not trying to stir stuff up, but you reach a certain point to where you get tired of any BS. And I wasn't the only one that got tired of cleaning up needless contamination.
So when you actually physically went out and did this, you know, put the kitty litter and the rags and the bags and things out, did anyone help you?
I had at least one other person helped me during that time. but it took like a couple of days to complete. So actually, there were, ended up being three of us. And the other two, like I say, I could give the name if it would serve the purpose, because they're both working out there still. And they could go ahead and verify what went on.
Did you take any pictures of the situation?
No pictures.
As it stood?
No.
Would you?
It was not the time that you would want to take pictures, once again, because of security intimidation.
When you, say you had wanted to take a camera into your tent farm, would that have been allowed? Could you have done it with permission or without permission?
With permission and good intent, I believe, but it didn't really cross our mind. Under normal conditions, you would have, but
yeah,
we were not trained to kind of go that direction.
Let me just bring up something else. In 1984, at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, there was a court case that found that for the first time that regulators, such as state regulators, would have access to DOE sites. And before that, they had not been legally even allowed to. Did anybody talk about that in 1984? Did anybody say things are going to be different now? The state regulators are going to start coming in and taking a look at these tank farms?
I can't say one way or another about that. I do know one guy that's with the state that was a former Hanford HPT, and he could tell some real stories.
Now,
with a lot of documentation to back it up.
In the 80s, when Rockwell was still there, did you ever see any state inspectors or anybody coming out besides Rockwell and DOE?
I can't recall. They might have been there, but they weren't identified as such that I can remember.
Okay, so
we used to do a lot more safety inspections years ago than what we've done for the last 15 years or so. Yeah,
why?
On a regular basis.
Why is that?
Why is it? They like to document things better back then under Rockwell. And under Westinghouse, we've even got a boss, which was Dave Reber, that is down at WIP now, as far as we know. And good riddance, because he has been attributed to statements that if it's the last thing that I do, we're going to get rid of all the log books. Now, that's me saying it. I can go ahead and find out. I can recall, at given time, who said that, because it was witnessed. And that was during the time with when Dave Reber and a whole bunch of the Westinghouse officers and gentlemen were coming down on Inez Austin for identifying major problems out there.
Do you think he wanted to get rid of the logbooks because they documented problems so well?
Absolutely.
And so the logbooks did contain observations about drifts and cave-ins and
yes,
things like that.
Yes, they were required logs. And that is a history of what's going on, a current history.
Tell me, I'm going to jump for another minute, but we can come back to that. In 1986, Chernobyl happened, and Chernobyl reactor burned in Russia, and there was a worldwide sort of scare about everything nuclear. Did anyone, to what extent did people talk about that here in the 80s? Did they seem to think it was going to change anything here, or... was it just, oh, it's too bad that that happened over there?
Well, there was a lot of direct reference to N-reactor during that time and the similarities that they had with Chernobyl. And, you know, would things ever happen that way and stuff like that? And nobody made the connection that we would ever be that sloppy with our work.
Now, in the mid-80s, from the time that Reagan made the Star Wars announcement in 82, till he signed the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty in December of 87, so about 5 years, there was a real spike in production at Hanford. How did that affect things? Did things get kind of frantic? Was it a time of high spirits because, yes, we're doing important work, or was it a time of sort of scrambling?
What time frame was that?
About 82 to 87.
When 82 to 87 would have been a much better attitude at tank farms and the other process facilities than what there is, than what there has been since. Westinghouse thoroughly shattered any kind of morale out there.
And then I'd like to talk about that contractor change in 87. First of all, can you talk about the bid period, when usually in a bid period things are, you know, a little strange. People are worried. They're holding a lot of closed-door meetings. Can you talk about that and then the time that it was announced that Rockwell had lost?
Aside from not knowing, I wouldn't know any details about it. And towards the end, things seemed to get more pressured with Rockwell, to where the feedback that I've got from other people is that it's not all that bad if they leave. So even Rockwell changed towards the end, is what I heard.
What about then when Westinghouse came in? It sounds like it was pretty dramatic change. What was the first way in which you felt that in the field? What changed?
Well, they brought in their ex-Navy nuke sub people, and we welcomed them, gave them plenty of chance rather than to shut them out, knowing that they didn't know what was going on with us. But after a few months, we got to see what their mode of operation was, and that they were out here, for lack of another word, to straighten us up. And I could say kick our ass, because that's the mode that we felt out there.
Did it feel like they were looking at us as sort of the, I'll just use a funny phrase, the black sheep of the nuclear industry, or the site that time forgot, that we were kind of backward out here?
Tank farms has always been treated that way. Always. And the reason I say that, I've got cartoons at home about an admiral that Admiral Bacon, and he referred to the American
I remember the cartoon.
It's a famous scientific magazine. I've got a copy of that. I haven't referenced that in quite a while, but he referred to tank farmers as a bunch of misfits and derelicts. And don't think that that didn't stick with us. Oh, who does this guy, the new guy on the block, think he is?
Exactly. I was going to say, was he the first head of tank farms under Westinghouse? I can't remember for sure. I know. I'm thinking of him in the 88-89 period. Is that correct, or...?
That all sounds familiar, but I can't pinpoint it more than that without really looking.
I can't either. And I should have that date, but I forgot that name as I was doing research.
The guy looked so tough, it looked as though he could chew you up and spit you out. He looked that tough. But his brain must have got left on the sub, because the guy never had anything good to say about us or for us. The message that he passed on to the rest of his ex-Navy nuke sub folks was that these people are a bunch of derelicts and misfits, and straighten things out. And that's when they effectively went on a rant with Jim Wicks, also right in the middle of that, because I talked to Mr. Wicks about it. I says, you know, you got people that are mad, discouraged, disgruntled. They're looking to get out of tank farms any way they possibly can. And during the next year and three quarters, about that time frame, they effectively purged tank farms out of probably 95 to 97% of their field knowledgeable people, thereby getting rid of centuries worth of tribal knowledge about what makes tank farms run. Now, in the meantime, all those years before, tank farms had a budget that would get preyed upon by the process facilities, leaving us to hold together tank farms equipment by baling wire or whatever, and actually leading to somebody from the outside looking at tank farms as though we are the pariah of the process.
I was going to say that in those years up to 91, tank farms was a subset of chemical processing. It wasn't its own organization. And I was going to ask you how that affected things, but you kind of answered that, that it did, you get a budget for chemical processing, and within that budget, they can transfer money. And so if Purex needs something, is it more likely to get what it needs than the tanks are likely? Is that true?
That's exactly what happened. And also, there were some people that were getting in trouble at process facilities over the years to where they were actually getting transferred to tank farms. It was the last stop before you hit the door. And, you know, these people pretty well straightened themselves up and realizing that, hey, you either work out at Hanford or you don't. And tank farms did get some people that were known to be troublemakers at the process facilities. And I tell you, across the board during that time, I'd rather work with most of them because they ended up being sharp and doing a good job. And it was a real team back then. There was some morale.
When you said that Westinghouse people said they were going to, quote, straighten up the place, how did they convey that? What did they do or say? Did they say that right out flat, you know, that we need to improve you and we need to change you? Or how did they show it?
No, actually, they didn't come out and say it. But you could tell by the way they acted that that was the direction they were taking. And I will say one thing very positive for Jim Wicks, even though he had one of the filthiest mouths out there for being a leader and would not hesitate using the word F in this or that around women. And, you know, that showed me no class. But I'll give him credit that after a period of time, he secured some major funding for some major upgrades for tank farms. And they put in a lot of them. They kept us real busy fixing old broken stuff and removing some stuff that could be taken out, upgrading. And there's a lot of research that went on to make it better. So I'll give Jim Wicks a full credit for that.
Now, before we go, I want to concentrate on a period where Westinghouse developed or instituted a whole new organization called TWRS, a TWRS, or
Tank Waste Remediation System.
Right, and that was in 1991, the first time that tanks had ever had its own organization separate from chemical processing. But before I do, I want to just ask about two things. When N-Reactor was announced in 1988 to be closing for good, and when the tri-party agreement was signed in 1989, focusing on cleanup, how did that play in the field? How did people feel real discouraged, or did they feel like, would we better, you know, our jobs aren't going to be here in 5 years? It's, how did they feel?
Well, that actually crosses your mind, you know, about the future. But as far as the cleanup, it actually probably helped secure us some funding. And that was during the time of wonderful Brock Adams, our senator. And I say that very facetiously. And apparently they had enough attention about all this to where the cleanup process was going to get some steady funding. So that actually ended up being more of a relief, I believe.
When, in 1991, as I mentioned, they created TWRS, and the vice president was Harry Harman, and his deputy was Wally Ruff. You probably remember them.
Harry Harman and Steve Marchetti.
Yes.
We called him Machete, but that was just kind of lovingly, I guess. Harry Harman was one of the very best leaders that we ever had out there for tank farms. One of the very best. And it kind of shocked me, but I was building steward during that time, I believe. And they actually knew me by first name, although I'd never seen him before in my life.
So that showed you that he had been looking at the people in the org charts and trying to learn? Is that what that showed
you? I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And so 1991, a lot of things changed. I was reading back. Looks like they put together special task forces to look at various issues like training, air compressor issues, exhausters failing, electrical hazards, etc. Tell me about that. Was it a time that in 1991 that you felt a sense of hope that they're going to, you know, really fix things, or did people feel that it really wasn't genuine?
This was actually what I'm recalling off the top of my head is that also being under Westinghouse, they wanted to status what they actually had to deal with out in the field. And they also had the logbooks during that time to show that things were documented for years about being broke. Now this would be a major reason for them to go ahead and look at all this stuff in the field, is to verify that yes, it is a piece of garbage that we've been holding together because of lack of funding. And this led up to the rock and the rope incident, for which we had nothing to do with, but we were blamed for all of it. And they actually shut tank farms down for 3.5 months. And that is also when morale went down to zero and people were transferring out of tank farms as fast as they could. There was a lot of things going on. There was a lot of problems identified, and it led up to DOE actually shutting things down and re-educating us to all kinds of supposed improvements for us to operate better tank farms. And I will say that the biggest improvement that I saw was that you had people like Hop Howlett, which was a off-site trainer from Idaho. I forget all his credentials, but he was extremely well-versed on what was going on because he'd seen these situations before. And he was the only bright light out of the whole thing. We had people that were taking tours of FFTF. People across the board saw the hunt for Red October and tried to make that as lessons learned, which actually... For a lot of things, it probably helped. But the idea that I had to drive 3 hours a day back and forth to work from Yakima area in order to get a paycheck was very, very demoralizing. And I wasn't the only one by any means. We had done award-winning work with all the window work at 101SY. Window actually first was the air lancing for about a year, 3 times a week of intentionally burping the SY-101 tank, and then all the window work that followed because the air lancing was not doing the whole job. Those air lances were actually all bent in the same direction because of the dynamics of the tank. It wasn't just going up and down like with a gas bubble. It was also turning counterclockwise, I believe it is, because all the lances were bent in the same direction, the same angle. So you could see the dynamics of the tank. Well, this led into windows A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and I, for which I was involved with each and every one of them, like most of the people, most of the old hands at tank farms. And this was when we were getting major gas ventings with no mask on, or with the wrong mask filters on if we were wearing a mask.
I did want to get into SY101, because I just, when I was researching, I find in 1991 they do start this deliberate burping. And is that where you were assigned most of the time in 1991?
A lot of the times. We were assigned to work on SY on a daily basis, but that would rotate with different personnel. Okay, so I was down there many times.
Many times during 1991.
Right.
And I don't know, people, what did they think of this? Did they, you know, kind of talk about it, oh, this is just another job, or this is one of the...